Are you passionate about skiing and looking for a way to give back this season? Join Canadian Adaptive Snow Sports and help us make a real impact by volunteering your time. From teaching adaptive skiing or snowboarding techniques to supporting our events, there's a role for everyone. Visit our website at www.cads.ski to learn more, volunteer, or make a donation.
Democracy Now.
Our goal is to ensure the safe return of Israel's northern communities to their homes. As time goes by, Hezbollah will pay an increasing price.
Israel appears to be linking its southern Lebanon frontier to Gaza as it vows to keep up military action against Hezbollah after mass walkie-talkie and pager explosions this week killed at least 37 people and injured thousands. We'll go to Beirut. Then 40 days out from the U.S. presidential election, the uncommitted national movement says we can't endorse Harris, but we oppose Trump and voting third party is a mistake, they say. We'll speak with the co-founder of the uncommitted national movement. And as President Trump continues to refuse to admit he lost the last election, we'll speak with filmmaker Michael Primo. He embedded with three Trump supporters around the 2020 election in his new documentary, Homegrown. One of the men he followed was sentenced to one of the longest prison terms for participating in the insurrection.
As a sheriff.
Pulled over.
Not with Trump flags.
But. Not with Trump flags, we're not.
Nah.
If, as long as I wasn't...
You could shoot somebody and you would get pulled over.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli military jets bombarded southern Lebanon Thursday while Hezbollah struck sites in northern Israel after mass walkie-talkie and pager explosions Tuesday and Wednesday killed at least 37 people in Lebanon and injured thousands more in what's widely believed to be a coordinated attack by Israel. Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah accused Israel of crossing all red lines as he addressed the week's attacks in televised remarks Thursday.
War crimes or a declaration of war, you can call it anything, and it deserves those words. Undoubtedly, we have been subjected to a major attack in terms of security and humanitarian aspects, unprecedented in the history of resistance in Lebanon. We say to the enemy's government, army, and society that the Lebanese front will not stop before the aggression on Gaza stops.
Despite the widely condemned attacks on Lebanon, Israel's doubling down on its intent to expand its war on Lebanon. This is the Israeli Defense Minister, Yoav Gallant.
Over the past several days, we have held a series of important discussions. This is a new phase of the war. It includes opportunities, but also significant risks. Hezbollah feels it is being persecuted, and the sequence of military and defense actions will continue.
U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has postponed a trip to Israel early next week amidst the mounting tensions. Associated Press reports Gallant warned Austin ahead of the attacks this week that Israel was launching a military operation in Lebanon, but did not give any more details. Deadly Israeli raids are continuing in the occupied West Bank, including in Jenin and Kabatia, where a video has been circulating showing Israeli soldiers pushing dead bodies off a roof after a raid that killed at least five Palestinians. The desecration of corpses is considered a war crime, but Palestinians say the Israeli military frequently violates the deceased bodies of its victims. During the Kabatia raid, Israeli forces also opened fire on a group of journalists filming the events. This is an eyewitness.
Israeli special forces, fully equipped, raided and surrounded the area. They started shooting grenades and missiles. They struck young men at our place on the rooftop as they were trying to escape the trap.
Israeli attacks on Gaza have also continued, with deaths reported over the past day in Gaza City, Jabalia, Nuseirat, and Beit Hanun. The official death toll in Gaza since October 7th has topped 41,000, with nearly 100,000 wounded, though the true toll is certainly much higher. A UN committee on Thursday accused Israel of engaging in unprecedented violations of the Convention on the Rights of the Child over the past 11 months.
More children have died in this war than men or women. That is massive. And I think when we think about it, and we know that under international humanitarian law that Israel admits it is bound by, killing of civilian targets on this scale is unacceptable in international humanitarian law and international human rights law as well. And children are always civilians.
Here in the U.S., three Democratic lawmakers Thursday introduced a bill that would restore emergency funding to the U.N. Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, after the U.S. suspended its contributions and in January and later passed a bill barring any further funding of UNRWA until March of next year. Resistance to Israel's U.S.-backed war on Gaza continues on college campuses as the new school year gets underway, with more protests and calls to divest from Israel. On Wednesday, Cornell University students shut down a career fair featuring weapons manufacturers supplying Israel's war on Gaza. Meanwhile, a chapter of the activist group Students for Justice in Palestine is suing the University of Maryland and College Park after the school canceled an October 7th Gaza vigil. In campaign news, Donald Trump said Thursday Jewish voters would be to blame if he loses November's election. Trump made the remarks at an event by the Israel-American Council titled Fighting Antisemitism in America.
The Jewish people would have a lot to do with a loss if I'm at 40%. Think of it. That means 60% of voting for Kamala, who in particular is a bad Democrat. The Democrats are bad to Israel, very bad. I mean, Chuck Schumer is a Palestinian.
North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, a Trump-supported, trans-bashing Republican gubernatorial candidate, referred to himself as a black Nazi and expressed support for reinstating slavery. That's according to CNN, which reports Robinson made the remarks over a decade ago on Nude Africa, a pornographic website. CNN also found Robinson called Martin Luther King Jr., quote, worse than a maggot, repeatedly used anti-Semitic and anti-Muslim slurs, and said he enjoyed watching transgender pornography. Robinson has a long history of backing anti-transgender legislation. On Thursday, Robinson denied CNN's report.
Let me reassure you, the things that you will see in that story, those are not the words of Mark Robinson.
While many have called for Robinson to drop out of the race, he has vowed to remain. A former longtime CIA officer has been sentenced to 30 years in federal prison for sexual assault. Over 14 years in the CIA, Brian Jeffrey Raymond drugged, photographed, and assaulted women he met while stationed in various countries. Disgraced Hollywood mogul Harvey Weinstein pleaded not guilty to a new sex crime charge in New York this week. Weinstein, who's been accused of rape and sexual assault by over 80 survivors, is currently awaiting retrial after a 2020 rape conviction was overturned. He was separately convicted in 2022 in a Los Angeles rape case and remains behind bars. Earlier this week, a federal judge in California dismissed a sex trafficking and sexual assault lawsuit against Weinstein and Madison Square Garden chief executive James Dolan. In the United Kingdom, five women have accused the billionaire former owner of the Harrods department store of rape. Others accused Mohammed Al-Fayed of sexual assault and harassment while they worked at his luxury department store in London. The revelations came as part of the new BBC documentary Al-Fayed, Predator at Harrods. Mohammed Al-Fayed died last year at the age of 94. Meanwhile, France has been gripped by the horrific case of a serial rape survivor, Gisèle Pelicot, as it plays out in open court. 71-year-old Gisèle Pelicot's husband, Dominique Pelicot, confessed on the stand this week that he recruited dozens of men for over a decade to rape his wife after drugging her so she was unconscious. The case has roiled France as throngs of people have come out to show their support for Gisèle Pelicot during the trial.
I would like to tell Gisèle that we hear her words. I am here to speak for the victims, to tell them that we are listening to them, we will fight for them, that the impunity of men is over.
Gisèle Pelicot chose to reveal her name and have a public trial in order to give a voice to other survivors. In climate news, the World Meteorological Organization warns the globe is on track to exceed 3 degrees Celsius by the end of the century, likely bringing about widespread climate catastrophe.
2023 was the warmest year on record by a huge margin. Leading international data sets say that the first 8 months of 2024 are also the warmest on record. There is an 80% chance that the global mean near surface temperature will temporarily exceed 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels at least one of the next 5 calendar years.
In more climate news, severe flooding from heavy rains in West and Central Africa has affected 4 million people, with nearly 1 million people left homeless. More than 30 people are dead in northeastern Nigeria after a dam ruptured and caused floodwaters to sweep across the city of Maiduguri. Aid groups say 150,000 children are in displacement camps, with many disconnected from their families and no access to drinking water. A record number of wildfires have been recorded across South America this year, surpassing the prior record set in 2017. Smoke recently blanketed up to 60% of the skies above Brazil, choking major cities like Sao Paulo and Rio de Janeiro. In Budapest, Hungary, the Danube has overflowed its banks after heavy rains pushed the river to its highest level in more than a decade. On Thursday, the European Union committed billions of euros to aid recovery efforts after the worst floods to hit Central Europe in at least 2 decades killed at least 2 dozen people and destroyed homes and infrastructure from Romania to Poland. Meanwhile, Portugal's government has declared a state of calamity as more than 100 wildfires continue to rage. At least 7 people have died in the fires. Back in the United States, in Tennessee, a federal trial is underway for 3 former Memphis police officers charged over the killing of Tyree Nichols, a 29-year-old black father who was beaten to death following a traffic stop in January of 2023. On Thursday, prosecutors showed the jury disturbing body cam video showing officers Tadarius Bean, Demetrius Haley, and Justin Smith milling around and failing to render medical aid to Tyree Nichols, who was slumped on the ground after he was brutally punched, kicked, tased and pepper sprayed by the officers. Nichols died 3 days later. The officers are charged with violating Nichols' civil rights, failure to intervene, and obstruction of justice for conspiring to cover up the killing. They also face murder charges in a Tennessee state court. 2 other officers, Emmett Martin and Desmond Mills Jr., pleaded guilty to federal civil rights charges ahead of the trial. The Justice Department has launched a civil rights probe into the Mississippi Sheriff's Department that was home to the self-described goon squad. The 6 white deputies were convicted for raiding a home and torturing 2 black men. You can see our coverage of this case at democracynow.org. In Kentucky, Letcher County Sheriff Sean Steins was arrested Thursday and charged with first-degree murder for fatally shooting District Judge Kevin Mullins after an argument in the judge's chambers. Authorities say they're still investigating a motive in the sheriff killing the judge. And housing justice advocates celebrated the introduction this week of the Homes Act by Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Tina Smith. The social housing proposal would establish a federally backed development authority charged with financing union-built, energy-efficient homes across the U.S., where rent would be capped at 25% of household income. The units would remain permanently affordable by keeping them out of the hands of corporate landlords, prioritizing cooperative and land trust models instead. The homes would benefit those most affected by the housing crisis, including unhoused people, people of color, low-income families, single mothers, and immigrants. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show in Lebanon, where reports suggest Israel appears to be linking its southern Lebanon border to Gaza. As we broadcast, the Associated Press is reporting Hezbollah has launched 140 rockets into northern Israel in what is said is retaliation for Israeli attacks in southern Lebanon. This comes as Al Jazeera reports Israel's reserve forces commander said earlier today, quote, "It is time for Lebanon to suffer as well, the power plants, bridges, airports and seaports as well," unquote. Al Jazeera has also reported on videos from Israeli government media sources that show Israel's minefields on Lebanon's border are being cleared to, quote, make way for what most likely will be a movement of ground forces into southern Lebanon. Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant said Thursday Israel will keep up military action against Hezbollah in Lebanon.
Our goal is to ensure the safe return of Israel's northern communities to their homes. As time goes by, Hezbollah will pay an increasing price.
This all comes after Hezbollah leader Syed Hassan Nasrallah denounced the deadly Israeli attacks that blew up walkie-talkies and pagers across Lebanon Tuesday and Wednesday, killing at least 37 people, including children, and wounding thousands more. As Nasrallah delivered a televised address Thursday, sonic booms from Israeli warplanes shook Beirut.
We say to the enemy's government, army, and society that the Lebanese front will not stop before the aggression on Gaza stops. We have been saying this for 11 months now. It might sound repetitive now, but these words come after these two big blows, after all these martyrs, all these wounds, all this pain. I say clearly, whatever the sacrifices, whatever the consequences, whatever the possibilities, whatever the horizon to which the region heads, the resistance and Lebanon will not stop supporting the people of Gaza and the West Bank who are oppressed in that holy land.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization says the explosions in booby-trap pagers and radios in Lebanon seriously disrupted Lebanon's health sector. The WHO's representative in Lebanon said 100 hospitals were involved in responding to the crisis.
You know, what happened for the last 2 days actually was an unprecedented incident, the explosion of different gadgets. And it's been used, not the normal explosion materials, it's been used a different. So it's sometimes, it's very difficult actually to know exactly the short-term and long-term impact of this substance that's been used for the explosion. But I think the expert, and as well as in collaboration also with WHO, now we are trying to study more exactly what happened, how it happened, what kind of material is being used, and how it's affecting the people that have already been wounded, which is over 3,000 people, and also 37 people have died so far.
For more, we go to Beirut, Lebanon, where we're joined by Rania Abouzeid, Lebanese-Australian journalist and author who is based there. Welcome to Democracy Now! First off, as you join us from Beirut, where there has been this wave of attacks, people are concerned about a second wave of explosions involving electronic devices. At this point, the figures are something like 3,500 people injured, 37, including children, are dead. Talk about the response on the ground, Rania.
Well, there is certainly a sense of heightened anxiety as people wonder what else, what other devices in their vicinity may explode. They wonder if anything that they're holding in their hands or that might be in their homes could be weaponized, turned into an improvised explosive device to maim and kill either them or the people around them. There is also anger about the attacks. The fact that people, you know, they didn't target combatants in a battlefield, but rather people going about their everyday lives. These devices exploded in supermarkets. They exploded as people were driving their cars. They exploded in people's homes. The hospitals, as you mentioned in that report, were overwhelmed. More than 100 hospitals rallied to try and help the thousands of wounded as well as some of the dead that were coming into the hospital. So there's also been an escalation on the southern Lebanese front with northern Israel. Overnight, there were more than 50 Israeli attacks on southern Lebanese villages. And as you mentioned in your report, more than 100 Hezbollah rockets have been fired across the border today.
Can you talk about what Nasrallah said yesterday?
Well, it was a very wide-ranging speech. Part of it was he looked at these attacks and he said, let's consider what Israel's aims were in this attack. And he pointed out three things. He said the first was to try and separate the Lebanese front from Gaza. And he said that won't happen until the war in Gaza ends. The second was to splinter and to pressure Hezbollah's support base to say enough. We have had enough of this. That aim also has failed. On the contrary, we have seen people who are wounded in hospitals saying that this is a sacrifice that they are prepared to make. The third thing was to disrupt Hezbollah's communications infrastructure, and Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said that that didn't happen. He also turned to these growing Israeli calls for a ground invasion of Lebanon or to widen the war in Lebanon, away from the southern Lebanese border region, but to engulf the whole country. And he said at one point that Hezbollah welcomes a ground invasion. It prefers to target Israeli soldiers on its home turf rather than in northern Israel. And he said that if Israeli soldiers cross that border, they will find themselves in hell. And he also said at one point they will also face, quote, hundreds of those who were wounded in Tuesday and Wednesday's attacks.
So what about the response to the reports from Reuters and the New York Times and other places that it was Israeli agents who were reportedly responsible, it wouldn't quite say accurate to say rigging devices, manufacturing these devices, not clear debate over where exactly they were manufactured, but possibly a Budapest, Hungary-based company was involved. Your response to this and the UN Secretary General Guterres saying that decrying the use of everyday electronics as a weapon of war?
Well, there's speculation is rife about exactly how these devices exploded and at what point were explosives placed in them? Were they remotely hacked? Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah yesterday in a speech said that Hezbollah has set up a number of committees to investigate this and that it would, soon release the results. As for the use, turning everyday objects into IEDs, basically, there was a press release recently, moments ago before we went on air, where UN experts said that it was a terrifying violation of international law, that you can't booby trap devices that civilians might use or that may be in the vicinity of civilians. So it is to use Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah's word again, unprecedented tactic, and one that is very grave, because it attacked so many different people. It wasn't a mass attack on people in the same location, but it was in at least three places across Lebanon, in South Lebanon, in the Bekaa Valley, and in Beirut.
As Guterres decries the weaponization of civilian objects, can you talk about, on the ground, in the hospitals, the kind of injuries that these hospitals that are overwhelmed are dealing with? Word is that somewhere over 3,500 people were injured.
Yes, and we have seen on Lebanese TV, we have seen trauma surgeons break down and cry as they describe some of the cases that they are dealing with. Injuries are predominantly to the eyes, to the face, to the torso, and to the hands. We have heard surgeons say that in the same operation, there are sometimes three or four specialists who are trying to save some of these wounded people. Each one is focused on a particular body part, so they are really quite devastating injuries. Some of them, there was a trauma surgeon this morning who was talking about how some of these wounded people might need multiple surgeries over a very extended period of time.
I wanted to turn to Pentagon spokesperson Sabrina Singh speaking Thursday.
Yesterday, Secretary Austin spoke by phone with his Israeli counterpart, Minister of Defense Gallant, to review regional security developments and reiterate unwavering U.S. support for Israel in the face of threats from Iran, Lebanese Hezbollah, and Iran's other regional partners. The secretary emphasized the U.S. commitment to deterring regional adversaries, de-escalating tensions across the region, and reaffirmed the priority of reaching a ceasefire deal that will bring home hostages held by Hamas, and an enduring diplomatic resolution to the conflict on the Israel-Lebanon border that will allow civilians on both sides to return home.
Can you talk about the U.S. response so far to these explosions in Lebanon? Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State, was in Paris. He cautioned against any further escalations that would make a Gaza ceasefire deal even more challenging, though it looks like that has fallen apart, Rania.
Well, I can tell. I can't speak to what the U.S. is to the U.S.'s point of view, but I can certainly tell you that over here, people very intimately link this Israeli offensive with the U.S. People point out the double standards in terms of international law. They also point out how, you know, Blinken and other U.S. officials talk about de-escalating the conflict while continuing to arm Israel, not only in Gaza, but also, of course, in with regard to its offensive here in Lebanon. So it's, you know, the mask has fallen on the doublespeak that is coming out of Washington.
Can you talk about the formation of Hezbollah, what its political aspirations are, and its relationship to the Lebanese government?
Well, it is part of the Lebanese government. Hezbollah has more than a dozen parliamentarians. It also has cabinet ministers, and it has had people in government for many, many years. It has a political wing, it has a military wing, and it also runs a lot of charities and schools and hospitals. It formed in 1982 as a resistance group in response to Israel's occupation, invasion and occupation of southern Lebanon. And it maintains its arms because part of Lebanon remains Israeli occupied and has been for decades.
Hmm. And what you see happening now with the Israeli government, the defense minister, Yoav Gallant, saying the war is widening, the reports of troops being used, Israeli troops being moved to the north from Gaza?
Well, that's the big question. That's the question that is on the minds of many Lebanese. What happens next? Will there be a ground invasion? Will there be airstrikes? We heard the Israeli official point out targets. He mentioned the airport. He mentioned the port, Beirut's port. These are all civilian infrastructure. And let's not forget that in 2006 war with Israel, the airport was hit on day one. Beirut airport was hit on day one, rendering it unusable. So the idea that Israel would broaden its war not just to target Hezbollah but to target Lebanese civilian infrastructure is a very is a grave concern over here.
I wanted to turn to your New Yorker piece. You said earlier this summer, I met with a Hezbollah military strategist in a small village in southern Lebanon, a few kilometers from the Israeli border. At one point during our off-the-record conversation, his pager beeped. He decrypted the message using a neatly folded piece of laminate paper. I hadn't seen a sheet like that since the 2006 war with Israel, when another Hezbollah militant in another southern Lebanese village pulled out one out of his pocket to relay a coded message over a walkie-talkie. The group has long used various low-tech methods, including pagers, as part of its strategy to avoid Israeli tracking and surveillance of cell phones. It also has its own landline network. Take it from there, Rania.
Well, I mean, this. I'll just go back to the 2006 incident. Not only did I saw two fighters in a southern Lebanese village, and they were using the walkie-talkies and this laminated piece of paper, but they told me about how they use coded messages. One man said, "If I tell my friend to meet me under the tree where he met his fiance, I understand it, he understands it, but even if a message like that is intercepted by the Israelis, they will not understand it." This is the advantage that Hezbollah has on its home turf. These are local